What are his thoughts on the size of the American military?
What's his thought on the size of the size of the American military?
Yes, the size of the American military.
We haven't asked. We have. That's one question that we haven't discussed about the size of the military. I can't really give you an answer.
Okay.
I do know that he believes very much in the military. He believes in the military as a peacekeeping operation. He believes that it is beneficial in that it is one of the ways that people who do not have a lot of, do not come from poor families, can get an education, can have a chance to buy a house in a reasonable area. You know, if you live through your military service, you have benefits. But also, there's a lot of people that do not survive their military service.
Right.
He doesn't believe that the military should be used for everything. You know, we have reasons to use the military. We don't use the military just to, you know, just at the whim of the commander-in-chief. There has to be a valid reason to use the military. And so that's one of the reasons that he trusted Hillary Clinton more than he trusted Donald Trump.
Right.
You know, on that area.
Okay. Thank you. What are his thoughts on... what? Sorry?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
What
are his thoughts on the criminal justice system? The criminal justice system.
Well, as an officer, of course he believes in it, and he also believes that we have many wonderful law enforcement people, and we have some bad apples. We have too many racists that are in the you know, white nationalists do not belong in law enforcement. There are some people that do not have the temperament to be in law enforcement. And he became a friend of Sandra Bland's mother during the time that she was trying to find out what happened to her daughter, what the real circumstances were of her death in custody.
Mm-hmm.
And he has worked very, very closely with her over the years. In fact, she actually came to Texas in 2018, I guess it was. It may have been 2018, and volunteered in Dr. Shirley McKellar's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
because of the relationship they established. He was very pleased to see the Sandra Bland Act signed into law by Governor Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
It does some things that are important. He would like to see the George Floyd Act and the Sandra Bland Act, those elements of it, be merged and passed nationally.
Mm-hmm.
The Sandra Bland Act has transparency. It has a lot of protection. It has a lot of things in dealing with the mentally ill and drug addiction. Very often, a jailer would just say they had gone by and checked on them when they didn't. So it calls for electronic monitoring, so they have to punch the button right there at the cell to show that they have checked on that person. It basically says that if there's ever a death in custody, that you don't get to investigate it yourself. It has to be an independent law enforcement agency to do the investigation.
Right.
So those are the protections. Then the George Floyd Act has some others that are important too. Now, the George Floyd Act basically goes in and says that there is a registry, that we need to have a registry of law enforcement officers that have been discharged because of not following the protocol. And so that's pretty controversial with it. But he also believes that we have to go in and address. He believes that everyone should be able. He believes in protecting the Second Amendment rights. Obviously, he is a gun owner.
Right.
But he believes that there are AK-47s. And he believes there are military weapons and weapons that can be modified to be military
right.
weapons that belong on the battlefield, and that rifles and long guns should be used for hunting game, not hunting people.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be worn around as a fashion statement into restaurants to intimidate other diners.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be able to have everyone licensed, everyone background checked,
mm-hmm.
everyone to have training.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to close up the loopholes of gun purchases.
All right.
You're still going to have the people that are getting a hold of the weapons illegally. But mm-hmm. if you take care of that, you can then address the others.
Mm-hmm.
But law enforcement are designed to shoot to kill if there is a threat. That's mm-hmm. their protective of life. He believes that we have got to stop using our police for everything that we haven't got covered. They're not supposed to be the box we check when we don't have anything else to do it. Every 911 call should not be going to the police. If it's mental health, drug addiction, we should have people who are trained in mental health and trained in drug addiction do the first call on that.
Right.
You might have a police officer with you, but you should, you know, those kind of areas. He is very much, he serves on the Veterans Administration's mental health advocacy board. He's an officer on that.
Mm-hmm.
He works as a mentor. He volunteers as a mentor in a one-year program. It's called the Veterans Court in Dallas, where you work with someone who has been drug addiction or mental, you know, that's gotten in trouble with the law, and it's a version program. And you have a mentor, and you work with that person 24/7 whenever they need them. And he does that. He works down in East Texas.
Right.
They realized that there were 13 counties that did not have access to in-person psychiatric counseling and social work counseling. He worked to see that they got it and that the VA paid for it. So,
right.
Yeah, he has some real concerns about what's happening with the mentally ill and the people that are falling through the cracks.
Okay.
He knows that he's where he's at because people helped him when he came back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he sees a lot of veterans that are falling through the cracks. And he's very concerned about that. And then there are other people that are falling through the cracks. And so law enforcement needs. And also, he's a black man. He's got black grandchildren.
Right.
He's a law enforcement person. The bias that goes, the more likely you are to be shot by a police officer if you're mentally ill or you're a person of color. Those are things that, you know, would concern any father, any grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yet, at the same time, the officers shouldn't have, if an officer is at greater risk of being killed now because of the number of guns that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know if you're in a grocery store and someone comes in with a gun, if they're coming in just because they've got a license and they're just shopping, or if they're coming in to do something? We used to be able to know that if somebody came into Piggly Wiggly with a gun, they didn't have a good purpose, you know.
Right.
They can stop them close to the door. Now they're right up on the aisle with you before you get a chance. They're right up on top of you, able to do a lot of damage. So there's a lot more mm-hmm. risk to law enforcement right now than there was before. We have to address it on both ways.
Okay. What does he feel on Medicare?
Medicare?
Yes.
The most efficiently managed healthcare delivery system in the nation. It's not perfect, but it is definitely, when you look at the cost of administration for Medicare, it is the lowest of any insurance company, any insurance provider, even the military is not as efficiently run as Medicare.
Uh-huh.
He would like to look at possibly a buy-in for people that are 50, to where some mm-hmm. people might be able to buy into it. He's not sure, but he thinks that's something that should be evaluated. He wants to put on the table our system and look at what the flaws are. See where we started with the Affordable Care Act, what we know now are the problems, the inequities, see how we can correct those, and how we can get more people covered. And
right.
If it's by making Medicare go a little bit longer, or if it's a way of jacking up the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he believes that people should have dental coverage. That's the way to find a way to make dental coverage affordable. Because, there's a lot of heart disease that's caused because of bad dentistry. And there's a lot of people that can't afford to go to the dentist. And it concerns him that people are working and they can't afford to You know, they're too poor to go to the dentist when they need to. They're too poor to go to the doctor. They're too poor to get that psychiatric counseling that they need.
Uh-huh.
And so the way that we do this is we invest in our people, and that's one of the investments in the people.
Mm-hmm.
We also have to see how do we pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other chance. It is not an easy solution. We have to look at what we can do and what's feasible and how do we pay for it. And those are
uh-huh.
questions that instead of fighting over it, we need to come to the table and solve them, you know, really
right.
look at them and debate them and research them and solve them instead of just passing the book one way or the
other. Uh-huh. Okay.
That's what he is. He's a person that basically looks at it, listens, and figures out a way to get it done. And he's done that since he left. He did it in the military, and he's done it since he left the military.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Battle Buddy is an example, because when he was with Brooks Medical, when he was now there's two organizations. This isn't the canine unit. This is the one that does the mentoring. But he
right.
founded that organization. When he was the CEO of it, they were mentoring 20,000 vets that were had come through Brooks Military Hospital. But he looks at it, and he sees a need, and he finds a way to get it done. That's what
mm-hmm.
he did down in East Texas with the mental health services. And that's what he's done with some veterans housing projects in different areas. So, and that's just as an individual. And so,
mm-hmm.
as a congressperson, I believe that he has the relationship with a number of people in Congress, and they'll look at him, and they'll see his heart, and see his skill, and see his willingness to solve problems. And he will, you know, you gravitate together. Those who are really wanting to find solutions, find ways to find solutions. And that's where he'll be. He'll be with the ones that are looking to find the solution.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are his thoughts on President Biden's recent talks with China?
I don't know. We haven't talked about that.
All right.
That's one on all these mountains and mountains of things. We have not talked about China,
okay.
other than what's happened with trade.
Okay.
So I can't even answer that one.
All right, fair enough. What are his thoughts, then, on the rise in anti-Asian sentiment as a result of the pandemic and recent shooting in Atlanta?
Oh, it's deplorable. Hate and discrimination coming against any person is an abomination to him. He considers one of his proudest moments when he was on the Pettus Bridge with the late Honorable John Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
He does not believe in, if you're Muslim, if you're Asian, if you're LGBT, if you're a woman, if you're Black, if you're Hispanic, you're an American. And you should be treated with respect as a human being. And no one in this country
mm-hmm.
of any race is responsible for COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody here caused it. Nobody here brought it over here. You know, they didn't. There's some people that are responsible for not helping us deal with it in a timely manner.
Right.
You know, there's some people that dropped the ball on it, but we did not cause it. And it just because of their ethnicity, you know, you definitely should not, you know, in that area. So
mm-hmm.
the discrimination is in the attacks on them are very troubling.
All right. The power outages of February left millions without power, sometimes for days, including, of course, the 6th District. Its damages are, pardon me, currently estimated at $195 billion and 111 estimated to have been killed. How will Mr. Eddings prevent this from happening again, should he be elected?
On the federal level, we require all energy transmission sites to be listed and winterized.
Madam.
On the cheap. Instead of just keeping them from having to do that, here in Texas.
Ma'am.
Here in Texas, we know that there was a piece of paper. They didn't even have them listed of which ones were supposed to still get that. And then also, they did not have the winterization. Our pipelines should have been buried deeper. But
right.
the pipeline doesn't require it. So on a federal level, we're probably going to have to go in and put some controls in on a federal level to address these issues. And also, there has to be some kind of control put in on the profiteering schemes of energy. Here in Texas, Joe Barton, Greg Abbott, and certain legislators have done their very best to protect their big donors at the expense of everybody else. And it's cost people lives. And you know, now Abbott's trying to deflect from it. You know, he's sent people down to the border. He's tried all kinds of things. He's done his math bit, all this stuff to deflect from the fact that he really blew it. But he really blew it. And he basically, they sat there and they knew from 2011 what was going to happen. They were told in 2011 what they needed to do. And every year in January, my electric bill always jumped up, even though I didn't use any more electricity.
Right.
And every Texan has paid through the nose because they have willingly taken compression stations offline so they could get those higher prices in January. And this time it crashed. And they still got, you know, 2 and 3, and sometimes even 1,000% higher. That's profiteering. That's schemes. And that has to do with the failure of politicians to look out for the people of Texas.
Okay.
And the buck rests not just with the PUC and not just the ones that left. The buck rests with the governor and with certain people who have been in office that have been the real protectors of that sector at all costs. That sector is an important sector, but they should not be allowed to profiteer at the expense of the Texas citizens.
Yeah, of course. What sets Mr. Eddings apart from other candidates in the Democratic Party? Of course, there are multiple running. There are multiple Democrats, multiple Republicans, multiple everyone. So what sets him apart?
There are some others that are veterans that are running on the Democrat and Republican side. But none of them have the width of experience that he has. None of them have the experience in emergency management. It was really an eye-opener for me during Hurricane Katrina when I realized that I couldn't just call the people who were running the show in Arlington while we were receiving them, because they were locked in a secure area, and the public had no access to the telephone in that area.
Right.
A state of emergency, which is martial law, is a very serious thing, and most citizens don't understand what happens during that. He does, because he has worked states of emergency for years in California and been the senior operations officer over that. So if something happens in this district and he's in Congress, he's going to know what's happening. He's going to be able to put his hands on them. He's going to be able to know who to contact, how to contact them, what to look for, what usually happens, where the breakdown is, to take care of things. That's the level that he has. Also, he comes with
Pardon me.
This is a personal situation.
Right.
I traveled with him a lot, and he was the security person on our team.
Okay.
And usually if there was something we wanted, it was no problem. But if it was something that had to do with security, we always knew that if he nodded his head and said no, that it was no, because he is always looking out for the security of everyone around him. If you're in his neighborhood, he's going to be as concerned about your security as he is going to be about his own wife's security.
Right.
That's where he looks at. He looks at what is going to keep people alive and at the same time respect their freedom to be the very best that they can be.
Okay.
That's how he is. He is the most, I'll tell you, he's a hard candidate to work for because he's so modest. You know, I mean, he's unlike any politician I've ever worked with, because he's not a politician. He is a person that is, he's usually finding solutions and pulling other people together to make them happen, and then he pushes them to the foreground for them to take the credit for what he instigated, for what he did. He's not out there to take vows for himself. He's out there to make things better. He sincerely is out there to make things better.
And right.
You know, of course, that's coming from somebody who knows him. And I wouldn't be doing this. I would not be doing this if I didn't know him as well as I do. Mm-hmm. And because I said I'm never doing. I basically said I'm not doing this again. I've done enough of that. You know, this time for somebody else to run this ship. But yeah, he's just he's a very rare individual. And also, in the years I have known him, I have never once had something the man told me that I couldn't take to the bank. He has never even covered up. You know, I mean, he might not say anything about it, but there's never been one film, one attempt to misdirect anyone I have ever seen in all the years I've known him. That's not something you come across in these politicians.
Right.
I don't know how you put that in the story, but that's just not, he's just not your normal egg, you know. He's just not your normal egg.
Thank you. Just a few more questions. Just a few more questions, and then, you know, I'll let you go.
Okay.
We've been talking for quite a while. How has COVID-19 affected the campaign?
Oh, enormously. Because for one thing, block walking. Usually you're out meeting people and rubbing hands and all that. And that's, you know, practically every interview, every meeting is by Zoom. You know, we're just now getting ready to start with block walking. We're having to, you know, all of our, we're trying to get people vaccinated so that they can be out there. We've done mass social distancing. We have Dr. McKellar, who is an RN, who was a commander over military units in the Middle East, who has basically set down what our COVID-19 protocols are. It makes all the difference in the world in how we did it. It made a big difference in just being able to file. Usually when you file, you go into different Democratic Club meetings and you go to your neighbors and you get your petition signatures.
Right.
Well, when he said he was going to try to do petition signatures in 3 days during a pandemic, I said it couldn't happen. But he got his veteran buddies out there and they basically collected the 5,500 signatures that we needed. We didn't use them because we didn't have time to check them out to make sure they were valid. We still paid the money. But to be able to make contact with that many people is astronomical. So we're still doing the things that we can do. And, you know, next week we're going to actually start literature drops instead of normally you go and you knock on the door, you try to talk to people. We're going to be trying to do literature drops.
Right.
If somebody comes out, yes, we'll talk to them, but it'll be at distance and everybody will have a mask and, you know, that whole kind of area. So it makes it very different. Mm-hmm. And also, people are hurting. You know, we're dealing with people who are in greater need. Even if they have the roof over their head and the money is in the situation, they've got emotional needs, they've got psychological needs, they've got grieving needs that have gone on. And so everyone is in a very different place this year than they were last year. And also, if it were not for COVID, two of the three seats that are coming up this month in Congress would not be having special elections. One of them in Louisiana was because the congressman took a job in the Biden administration, but the other one is because the young man died of COVID-19, and so did Ron Wright.
Yes.
So COVID is making a difference politically and opening seats up, and that's not how you plan on running. It also means that this is the most complex election. We had 50 days to do what normally you do in 18 months in a congressional race. Just to file the paperwork, get the checking account, and to do those kind of things is astronomical. And also, a candidate usually has months in which to get his 1 minute, his 2 minute, his 3 minute elevator speech, and to get, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and to get the issues. And there wasn't, you know, you did it all at the same time in very accelerated speed.
Right.
And you're running against, there's 23 people on the ballot.
Yes.
Who knows what in the world that will do. Mm-hmm. And who knows how many, you can't judge you can't go back and look at any other election and make a guess about what the turnout's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if it was another special election, it wouldn't have been a special election between three candidates.
Yeah.
And if it was a congressional race, it wouldn't have been a special election with your local candidate. So it's just a crapshoot. You know, who knows what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
But we do know this, that whatever we do, we will be building some infrastructure, we'll be identifying some voters, we will be engaging some voters that may not have been engaged, we will be bringing out some folks that voted in 2020 to a local election for a congressional race, and maybe some of these folks will get in the habit of voting in your municipal elections, and we have a difference. You know, and so that may be a good one, because if they get in the habit when they're young, then maybe they'll continue doing that. So, you know, whatever happens, there's a good side and a difficult side anyway.
Uh-huh. All right. If Mr. Eddings isn't elected this time, what do you anticipate his future and his ambitions for the future would be?
He has already said that he's running in 2022.
All right.
If he isn't elected. In fact, we had a discussion today about his filing his FEC intention to run, you know, and I pointed out to him, you know, you've already got your checking account, you've already got your act, well, you've already got a lot of stuff done, and so, you know, just go with it. Yeah, his intention was to run in 20. He'd been thinking about running for a long time. He just hadn't thought about running this year because he didn't know this seat was going to be open.
Uh-huh. Which historical figure, a lighthearted question to end this, which historical figure would he identify with most and why? Or which historical figure do you think he identifies with most and why?
He says the two that he admires most and that he would rather fashion himself after would be John Lewis and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And that is because they each faced great discrimination.
Right.
They each persevered. And they each opened doors to segments of people that many people thought would never be opened.
Right.
And he basically has said, if it's necessary, it's not impossible.
Uh-huh.
You can't afford for it to be impossible. It is something people desperately, vitally need. And so you continue working for that as long as it takes to take care of it. And those are two people that have done that. And so he looks at that. This man hasn't got a misogynistic bone in his body. I mean, it's just incredible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He really, I've asked him what he thought about Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, and he said some of the best soldiers I've ever known, men and women, were under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and it was good for them to be able to come out of the covers on the, you know, that type area. He's not at all. He has no problems with LGBTQ in the military. And
right.
He also... truly has no problem with women, because he was staunchly behind Hillary Clinton, and he has put the last 8 years of his life on hold to try to get Shirley McKellar elected over Louie Gohmert down in East Texas.
Right.
So he's a rare bird.
Thank you. All right. Any final comments?
Well, I think I pretty well commented.
Yeah. Right.
Would you send me a link to whatever you write?
Oh, yes, of course. So I'm writing this for Wikinews, of course, WIKINEWS. It'll hopefully be finished and approved and published by hopefully about a week or so. Thank you very much. I will email it to you.
Early voting comes out on the 19th.
Yep. Yep.
Right on the nose.
Yep, tight schedule, but, you know. I'm sorry, by the way, I had to reschedule a bunch. It was
a
nightmare. Yeah.
I couldn't have done it over the weekend. This weekend, I have done nothing but Dallas Morning News, Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Legal Women Voter Survey. I've spent the whole time not even surfacing, and you would think they would be easy, but it will take you 12 to 14 hours, even if you have all the answers. They're going to be worded different, and they're going to have different characters.
Uh-huh.
So, or if they've asked the same question, one will ask it where the answer is no, and the other will word it so the answer is yes.
Right.
You can't do any. There's no nothing other than 100% right on down the line. And of course, I always have to be very sure that I'm going with his answers, you know. So,
okay.
But then it's my job to put them into words and crash them and make them work. And so those were my priorities this last weekend, and I didn't have a chance. And then also all of his push cards, so that we could get those to the printer. So it was, I'm sorry that you were ill, but your timing worked out much better.
Yeah. Well, you know, thank you very much for the opportunity. I hope your campaign,
thank you.
Best of luck with your campaign.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.